tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Welcome to the AfterBuzz, the Bates Motel AfterBuzz pre-show this time. It's not the AfterBuzz after show yet.
No, we're pre-ing right now.
It's a pre-show. What is this music? What is this?
This is Enjoy the Silence.
Oh,
which was
not the Depeche Mode.
Not the Depeche Mode. It's a cover. I'm not sure who the artist is. Mark, who's the artist?
It's a female.
Lacuna Coil.
Yeah.
Okay.
This was featured in the trailer.
Yes. In the trailer for Bates Motel Season 3, which we are here talking about. We're so excited.
Woo!
To be
yes.
back. Where does the time go? I mean, like, we're a year ago.
It was a long time ago. I feel like this was, like, an exceptionally long period of time in between seasons. Am I wrong?
You look different back then. I remember.
I've gotten so old.
Well, let's take care of some business first. I'm Joe Braswell, as always, here again. I'm joined by the lovely Joe Sanfilippo.
Nice to be here with you guys.
Also joined by Nando Velasquez.
Hello, everybody.
And on the couch is Dua Casey.
Hi, how are you? Welcome.
And we have two special guests this time. We have the lovely Tracy Spiridacco.
Hello.
And the lovely Nestor Campbell.
Carbonell. Campbell works.
I'm sorry, Nestor.
What's good is that we're not doing this. It's not a live thing.
Let's
go ahead and run it back.
Campbell.
I'm not sure. He makes soup.
All right. Once again, if you're just tuning in, Nando's gotten considerably better looking. It's because Nando's not. Last time we did that joke.
I'll take it. Kind of like brothers. Yeah.
So
Esther Nando.
Parents like cousin Nando.
Yeah. There we go.
So let's talk about, we decided this time we wanted to just get into sort of a pre-show a little bit and talk a little bit about where we left off with season two, talk about where we may be going for season three, and talk to our guests about their experiences on the show. I want to ask first, I mean, so the show is wrapped, right? You guys are wrapped?
Yeah, we wrapped Sunday at 4 a.m.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Everything's done.
Really?
We owe a couple scenes.
Okay.
We got a few scenes. You know, there was a stunt mishap.
Right.
So
if you guys notice, if they look off camera, and they're looking at the network handler to make sure they don't get in any trouble.
He's got a gun.
He's terrifying.
Just in case.
He's already shot four people.
Terrifying.
We should introduce Young. Yes.
Young's there. Yes. Young from Universal. so we're wrapped, which is good, because usually, you know, in these things, some of the networks stuff, as you know, because you're on multiple shows. We'll talk about that later. But you know, they you know, we're in the middle of the season as we're shooting. But you guys wrapped this all out.
Yeah, we're essentially wrapped all 10 episodes,
okay.
And we start airing Monday. So we do a little ADR, you know, looping, but basically we're done.
Okay. Well, I'll get to all the spoilers because we want to know everything. We want to go back and talk about, because last time you were here, you're from midway through season two, and I think the episode was
The Purge.
It was like episode six or seven?
I think it was episode six.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Was it Purge or six? I can't remember.
Yeah, it's one of those.
It was in the middle of the season.
The one episode that you weren't in, actually, Nestor, so that's kind of a bummer. That's just kind of a bummer. But we talked a lot about it. We're trying to get our head around Alex Romero, because we're trying to figure out, you know, what is this guy's end game here? What is he more of a criminal? Is he more of a good guy? Is he just trying to keep the as Joe says, the
proverbial fish in the court and the horse?
The crab and the horse. And then we kind of saw him sort of a little bit of sort of his, I don't want to say true nature. We got a little bit of the answers we were looking for, but at the end of the day, I still think you're shrouded in mystery. I don't really know who Sheriff Romero really is. Yeah. So why don't you tell us, what's the deal with Alex Romero?
Sure. The deal with Romero is that we're going to find out. We're going to find out this year. That's the deal. We're going to find out in episode. I'll tell you which episode. Episode 7.
Oh, okay.
So this 7, I will be in.
Okay.
And this one. far as I know. And we'll find out what makes him tick to a certain extent,
sure.
and why he is as grumpy as he is, and
right.
you know, and yeah, we get into sort of his backstory, and it's familiar territory for me in the sense that I got to work had the great privilege of working with Carlton Cuse on Lost, and you know, and he called me to do this show as well, which is I was so thrilled to do, and again, it was another character shot at a mystery, which that character was revealed much later in the series. Yes. So this, at least now, I have a sense of what his history is.
Right. Well, I will say, like, the character shrouded in mystery, you do that very, very well.
No, thank you.
Yes, he does.
I just pretend to know what I'm doing.
You're
who
gifted.
I am.
So this is, I don't know.
Fake it.
It's good, I got it.
Don't know anything about it.
It's fine. Right. Back to
one. So I want to talk in a general sense about just the phenomenon of Bates Motel. I mean, obviously the franchise itself is over 50 years old, you know, so it's kind of like big shoes to fill.
Yeah.
But these last two seasons and going this season, like, you know, the show is really taken off with the diehard fans of the old Hitchcock fans, as well as a bunch of new fans. Like, you were at Comic-Con. Like, what's it like? What's it been like just being a part of this whole phenomenon?
It's been amazing. And Tracy, you're about to jump into this too. And it's what I love is that, you know, we're talking about Psycho and watching Psycho and, you know, and obviously older fans of the film, but now seeing younger kids embrace, you know, this crazy dynamic now between Norman, mm-hmm. you know, and this world of Psycho is fantastic. And it's Comic-Con was amazing. I loved all those panels because you know, the diehard fans, they have the best questions. They're, you know, they're really watching the show. They're, you know, they get all the nuances. And so it's great to interact with
them. Any Sheriff Romero, any cosplay, any Romeros out there?
A lot of mysterious men.
A lot of mysterious men. Trace, were you a big fan of the world before coming onto this and or the show? Or are you like...
I enjoyed the show very much. I think it's such an interesting idea, the whole concept of the show. And they're all amazing. They're so amazing. And getting to play with them has just been an amazing experience. I don't know. Like, watching the show, the caliber of talent involved with the writing and acting and the crew's amazing. Like, I mean, it's just everywhere, all around goodness.
Yeah, and you're no stranger to sort of really genre fans coming from Revolution. You're definitely no stranger to the rabid fans. You know?
Yeah, but it's amazing. Like, going to Comic-Con and seeing a group of people like that's so passionate about what we do, and not only, it's not even necessarily about the actors, it's also about each other, and there's like this communication with everybody, and it's just the energy at Comic-Con is my favorite. I love going.
Flippy?
No, keep going. You're doing good.
Well, great. So back to season two. So season two sort of ended in this really cool, almost just sort of throwback to Psycho with that last scene we see Norman. You know, this is all leading up to, you know, when is Norman going to have that moment? When is Norman going to have that really full, when is he going to fully Norma out? You know? We've been teasing it, but that moment leading up to where Veer sort of saves him and then the woods and then brings him back to the famous lie detector test. That moment was as great as any. Did it look like that on the page, or was it something like when you read that, we're like, oh, this is the Psycho moment, or was it kind of...
You know, the Terry Aaron, the entire writing staff, Carlton Cuse, you know, they're pretty extraordinary, and they, as you know, when you read the scripts, they're pretty descriptive, you know, about what they want to see in, you know, the show and how. But we also have, you know, incredible directors, and Tucker Gates, our producer director, directed those last two episodes. You know,
he directed a bunch in season two.
He did four in two, and he did five in one.
That's
a lot.
One, yeah,
he was working.
He's great.
He's amazing. If you get a chance to interview him, he's incredible.
Yeah,
awesome. But he, what I love that he does, and I know you obviously work with Tucker, was that he'll see what's on the page, and it's pretty explicit, as I was saying, but he will find even other areas to either create tension or to draw attention or a pop-up moment that isn't necessarily on the page. So some of it is what the director, in particular Tucker, brings to it, but a lot of it is scripted, and that's a tribute to Carrie, and the writers are amazing.
Right. I want to ask about your relationship with Norma and then the Bates in general. It sort of feels like there's this, you know, you continue to be sort of drawn to them and pushed away and drawn to the family, and you're almost a part of the family now. The way you've helped Dylan and this whole thing, but like, where
lives at the motel?
Yeah, it's like he's
wow. I mean, the soup.
Yeah,
everywhere.
It also adds to some of the more comedic moments of the show. Your relationship with Norma, because she's always it's got something going on.
It's marriage without the sex. Or it's just marriage. Not true.
You know, getting into like sort of Romero's motivations ending season two, we saw him sort of like, he really wants to get to the bottom of this whole Norman thing, but feels like he kind of is he, I'm asking, was he really rooting for Norman to not be the killer, or was he convinced he was the guy? Like, for you playing that,
because
it's two things. It's either like, this is the guy, I'm putting him away, I have the DNA, or is it like, he's going to spot here, I want to help him out, but you know, he did it.
I think you're right. I think that's what is a struggle for that character, for Romero, is that on the one hand, he seems to be a guy of the law, or at least his version of the
law.
You know, and then by the same token, he's like you said, he's been drawn to this family. He's been drawn to this kooky woman. He loves, he's falling for her. Mm-hmm. And I think he feels for this kid. I think he doesn't feel that this kid is fully aware of what he's done or is capable of.
Right.
But I don't know. I don't know what he would do with if he found out. If that lie detector came back, you know, positive, or right. You know, I wonder if he would, you know, if he would prosecute him, or if he would, you know, maybe get him help.
Well, was that a relief moment for Romero when he passed the polygraph? Was that a relief for Romero, or was that like a?
How much stock does Romero put in the lie detector?
I think he put enough. I think he wanted to be proven right, and he wasn't. So I think, you know, I think right. that was a problem for him. So I don't think he was relieved. I don't think so, because he's like, oh, dang, you know, I always want to be right.
Right.
At least I do.
If you were playing a mysterious character, you'd want to be right too.
I play one in real life. I want to transition into this whole, you know, the town is based, you know, the whole town economy over the last 40 years has been based on the weed game, right?
Yeah.
And so we've got this sense of Romero, who's this guy who's like, this is what it is. I'm here to keep the town running.
Right.
But then towards the end there was a little bit of, it seemed like you took a little initiative to sort of do a little bit more than that. And the question is, were you just trying to keep the scales balanced and keep the town running? Or is this your move to take a bit of this for yourself?
You know, I think that remains
Romero
to be seen.
Romero on that, not you. Sure, I'm sure Nestor, you don't care about weed. Nestor doesn't care about weed, y'all.
Profits I care about. No, but
Romero.
Romero. I think that remains to be seen, y'all. I think we're going to find out.
Was that episode 7 you're talking
seven
me about?
Sure. Seven and eight, we're going to find out what that means.
At the end of last season, we knew for sure that you were a gray character. There was no more, we couldn't put any more, you couldn't really play the game anymore that the sheriff was all you know, at this point we know, you know, Nick's dead, I killed him, okay, get in the car. You're not going to jail. We're going to go to Nick's house. We're going to see what's going on. You know, right. I mean, at this point, we all know that he's a great character. So I'm really excited to see, you know. At that point, you got to kind of take next step. He's got to be involved in the. I'm not saying you're involved. I'm just saying.
We'll see. You know. We'll see. We'll see how dark he is. See how.
My name's not Carl nor Carrie. Don't look at me.
I'm just saying.
I don't know. I'm sitting here. Okay, so we'll see. So that was season two, which was fantastic. I want to, you know, transition to season three. Like, I want to talk to you, Tracy, like, about how you came to. How you came to this family? I mean, how you came to this role? I mean, is it something that you got the call? Something you're pursuing? Like, how did you come to Bates Motel?
I got a call that there was that this part had come about, so I went in and auditioned for it. And it was amazing for the whole time. It's been great. The whole casting process was awesome. Casting director was amazing, and then. Coming on board, like, it was, you know, it's like your first day of school. You show up and you're nervous, and I had just come off Revolution, and then I'm going on to somebody else's set. You know,
you're a little... You're set. What are you talking about?
Yeah, well, you know, but you're just like, you're the new kid.
Yeah.
But they all were so welcoming and awesome. We just kind of jumped in and started laughing and having a good time day one. So, yeah, it's been an amazing process.
And I'm guessing this is a very different role, obviously, than Revolution, because Revolution is such a great adventure series, and this just has such more, much more darker, you know, and every woman that seems to come into this town has some kind of weird stuff going on. Either she has a relationship with Norman, or yeah, her brother, or something's going on.
And Annika has a lot of mystery to her. I mean, she comes from a really kind of torn up past and an interesting, you know, backstory.
Yeah.
And then she does come here. She has a reason why she's in town, and there's something kind of within that that changes some things for everybody going forward.
So, is this one of these things where when you got the part or when you're presented with the role that you know the entire arc before? Is it sort of like this is some parts of the character, and then you get the scripts as you go along, and it's revealed, or is it like this is what's going to happen to her? This is how you're playing her from day one. Now, how much information did you have?
I didn't have any information as far as the arc goes. Every episode, you kind of see. Yeah.
Okay, but you had to kind
of, I mean, I knew the basics, but right. you kind of get the story points as you right. get through them.
Because the arc I saw when I saw you show up was that she's in room number four. And there's a shower running. Like I don't know if it's gonna work out for you.
But there's also, I mean, within that, and because people think that way, right. there's the, you know.
Yeah,
is there a misleading thought there?
The McGuffin whole flipperoo, man. I mean, yeah.
Well, you know, let's ask this. I mean, you're coming in season three, and we've slowly been seeing the evolution of Norman. So, and also his relationships between Emma and Bradley and everyone else he's touching on. What would you define Annika's relationship with Norman? Where do we see Norman in this?
I mean, she's kind of a distraction for Norman, I feel right. like, you know, from his mother and from other things. And they have kind of an interesting dynamic. They're kind of buddies. Like, I mean, she really trusts him. And there's a moment in the first episode where he tells her that she's a really, you know, she seems like a really nice girl. And yeah. that really speaks to her sure. so much because of her life and everything that she's gone through. Somebody all of a sudden sees her in a way that nobody else does because they judge her in every way. So they do connect in a really great way.
Right. It seems, I mean, there's a lot of chemistry between you and Freddie and you know, and your character Norman even. I think, I mean, we've all seen the pilot. So, and then the pilot hasn't aired, I mean, the pilot, the premiere episode that's going for season three, the season three premiere, I should say, that Mr. Campbell's in. I'm kidding.
he makes really good soup.
We've all seen the season three premiere. We don't want to spoil too much, but there's a lot of interaction with you and Norman, you and Freddie. And, I want to know, I mean, I couldn't really tell. I mean, does she like him initially? Because we can tell that, you know, Norman's a little smitten with you. But how does she perceive Norman?
She sees him as he's a sweet kid. You know, yeah. His mom's a little overprotective. Sure. You know, but she's never really had the parent. She's never really had parents be there for her. So at the same time, she sees it as sweet that yeah. she actually has he has somebody looking out for him. Sure. She never had that.
Right.
She doesn't understand, you know, that whole thing.
Right, right.
But, you know, that's her observation. And he's, you know, she's used to getting glances in a certain way. So the fact that he's looking down her shirt and he's being, right. you know, he's a teenage kid, yeah. you know, like yeah. I don't, she doesn't really take it in that way. So it's more just like a sweet kid.
Right. I think that's really interesting that it's, you know who Norman is, you know how the story ends, as we said time and time again, but now the perception of seeing him as this sweet little kid, because I think that the second to last scene in the season finale of season mm-hmm. two, when he goes into the woods with the gun, mm-hmm. I think that that scene was the death of the young boy and mm-hmm. the birth of what will be this crazy serial killer. So the sure. fact that your character sees him as this sweet thing really, I think, is going to be important mm-hmm. for the audience to stay connected to Norman's character
mm-hmm.
and not have him, like, dip off.
Right.
So I think that that's pivotal.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It's also interesting to see, you know, this arc with Norman, in that we know there's this extreme bond with him and Norma, but again, because we know the end story, well, obviously, you know, it doesn't work out so well for Norma, right? So mm-hmm. there is this, you know, so
we suspect
somewhere along
we know
the
how this
line,
is.
Like it goes kind of bad with Norman and Norma to the yeah. point where you
she
know,
winds up in a rocking chair,
upstairs. So, it's really interesting to see this journey, which is really amazing.
Well,
yeah.
I think, and I have a feeling that your character is going to definitely have something to do with Norma too, since we see how possessive Norma can be and territorial she could be when it comes to her son.
Yeah.
She affects a few different people throughout her, you know, her visit.
She affects the whole show. No, seriously. Tracy is instrumental in the show. Huge. Yeah. And,
How fun is that to play?
So fun. So, yeah. But, and it's so different, you know. Annika's very different than Charlie, and so it's, you know, it's been a lot of fun. I mean, just getting into the mindset and creating, and you know, who she is and what she's all about, and then getting to play in this dark world with them has been pretty amazing.
Yeah, and last, like I said, on that, like, you know, at least we're talking about only episode one. What was it like, you know, finally getting there and working with Freddie Highmore? I mean, he's by all accounts, amazing, but you had a lot of scenes together. How was that? How did you guys get along?
I mean, we just all got on really well right away, so it was fun. I mean, even meeting Vera, too, I was like, hi.
Yeah, yeah. That's how we
You're
are.
You're amazing.
Nestor, I may remember last time. I have a problem because I'm in love with Vera.
Yeah. Who is it?
It's unreal.
Yeah. Who is it?
That's exactly what Nestor said, actually.
Yes.
I mean, and she's amazing. Like, she's like down to earth. She's hilarious. She's super cool. So, yeah. Crush grows when you get to know her, by the way.
Gets worse.
Just bigger.
Be worse.
Just bigger. We were at Comic-Con for Revolution, actually, and I remember looking over and I was talking to Billy and I was like, that's Vera. He's like, okay, calm down. I'm like, I cannot calm down. I was so excited to see her. And of course, I was just awkward in the corner. But anyways, it was really cool going on set. They were, and we all just, I mean, again, we just all got on really well together. So we just jumped in, and Tucker was directing that episode. So we just, I don't know. Fun.
You know, speaking of directing, if I may move forward, we have a couple of questions from our audience tuning in live to us on YouTube. And iPyroKinetic wants to...
Don't warm anything up, guy.
He wants to... Yeah, totally. Yeah, exactly. Don't warm anything up. But he has a question for Nestor. So, Nestor, how was it directing your first episode this season?
Ooh. Thank you for asking.
Spoiler alert.
He wants to know if you were super bossy in your cast.
How was I, Tracy?
The worst. No, I'm just kidding. The worst.
Pretty bad. It got to me. The power got to me. No, it was amazing. It was, an incredible opportunity, A, to get to direct anything, and then to get to direct a show I love.
Sure.
I blame Vera for that. She was the one who started... saying that I should direct. I had never had any ambitions to direct.
Really?
Oh, wow.
I always wanted to write. She said, no, you should direct. I go, really? I don't know. So she kept telling Carlton and Carrie, yeah, you should direct an episode at some point. I was like, really?
So which one?
It's five.
Episode five.
Episode five, yeah. So, so that was it,
Put it on the books.
Put it on the books.
To that point, I mean, you know, getting slightly away from the base motel world.
Can we follow up on that for a second? I got one more question before we slightly go away from there. Because
no,
this
I was
going away.
This is
big news.
I was
going to
mention that.
I'm gently interrupting. So in directing versus acting now, because, I mean, you had to live with this a lot longer than everybody else did. Everybody else got to go home and go to bed.
Right.
So, I don't know. What would you say the biggest difference is? I mean, obviously you're behind the camera, but I mean, like your personal involvement, your heart. I guess
it's weird. You're right. It was because I was talking to another director, Roxanne Dawson, who's directed for us before, and she was an actor turned director. And I asked her, how was it for you? And it's the same question. You know, especially being in it and also directing. And she said it was really hard to wear those hats because. You're, as a director, you're omniscient. You really have sort of an overall perspective of the story, whereas, you know, the character, you have your slice, and and you only see it through the prism of your eyes.
Right.
So you have to kind of switch, you know, visions and hats, you know, and it was weird. That part, the acting, and I would just pat myself on the back.
Sure.
Flagellate.
You got a good one.
Do you get more insight as a director? Because I can only imagine how much information Carlton and the execs give you guys as actors. Do you need to know a little bit more as a director?
That's a good question.
You do. You know, so I would just ask. I had no problems. And then I would just sort of hold it over everyone else.
Oh, man, that's going to be funny.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
Just be present.
Well, I was going to say, stepping outside of just the base motel world slightly, I mean, you know, to this point, I mean, you're a busy guy. I mean, you're on a network show. We're on a network show. And, you know, and this was going on, and you're directing. I mean, like, you know, you gotta save some jobs for Joe Flip over here. Like, people come to this town to act, and you got.
I got kids. That's okay. That's
what I got every job. No, but yeah, were you doing? I mean, obviously they weren't happening at the same time, but
they actually were. I was doing. Wow. So it was. It's just the way it worked out. It was State of Affairs, also another Universal show, and so that was, you know, I was able to work because they're both in the same studio.
Sure.
And that shot in L.A. and Bates is in Canada, so I would just fly back and forth.
Oh wow!
And then the directing was a trickier part because I had to be there. Shadow Tucker directed the first two episodes. So I had to learn the show.
Right.
So to be there, act in it, and then fly back to do State of Affairs. You know.
Wow.
But they were amazing. Both productions were able to work with the schedule, but I didn't see my family very much.
No.
I think I saw them. My wife counted.
Right.
5 days out of 60.
Wow, that's a lot.
It's cool though, because you know, back in the old days when you see someone on another show, like when I'm watching State of Affairs, and when you turned up, you know when the doors opened, you turned up. I was like, what? You know, I'm like, Romero's dead.
Yeah. Whenever we see someone on two shows, that's always like, which one is Conorant? Which show is Conorant?
You know, so I'm so happy to see that. They're like, oh, it's Universal. Oh, okay.
He was crying. It was very sad.
He said, Campbell's not on anymore.
Campbell may be dead.
Right. But this is, Campbell's dead. This is in the old days. This is the day, it's a new day. So it's cool that can happen.
I was thrilled. By another great show, incredible cast, you know, and it was really sweet that they were able to make that work for me.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about season three. You know, I mean, we talked just about some of where we think this thing might go. Now you guys know everything, so we're going to try to. This is where we try to ask you a bunch of questions, and you sort of dodge all our answers.
This is where we make him really.
Watch if they flinch.
So my first question is, where do you die?
Probably four.
Not in episode 5.
Yeah.
No. He makes it till 7. We're clear on that.
Well, we do know. I mean, we know we're going to get more. Easy. You've already said we're going to get more Romero, like, so exactly where he's.
Sorry.
It's all right. We'll get sort of like the definitive answers on Romero, you know, in that way. But, like, I guess the general question is, are we. Is he going to be. Closer, are we going to see him with more interaction with the Bates family post this whole incident, or is he going to be away from the Bates family?
I think he can't help but be, you know, sort of be drawn to the family in some way or other, either to investigate them or because he sort of has some affinity to Norma. But
I'm sorry.
No.
He still lives in the hotel, right?
Yeah, you'll see me in the hotel. We'll see what happens. See what happens with my living situation. But,
Cool
lady pulls up on a porch. Things get interesting when a cool lady pulls up on a porch.
You know, I was in room 11, 4.
Four.
It's a
walk down the road.
It's a short walk. She's a busy girl.
So, I mean, are we, and then in terms of, you know, I don't want to ruin too much from the premiere episode, but there's a lot told about what's going on with Norma and Norman's relationship and sort of where that is and where that may go. There's definitely some hint at Dylan and Romero's relationships and where that takes up. Yeah. But more importantly, you know, you're introduced in this episode, and I'm just curious. You know, like I mentioned earlier, you seem to sort of step into that iconic. Room 4, which is not a spoiler because I think that was talked about, and there's a shower incident in there, you know, as was talked about. Like, so I want to know. We know you're sticking around now, as you told that, but like, are we going to see like some sort of an involvement, an entanglement with Norman, or is this just sort of? What's that relationship maybe going to be like or not be like?
I like what you're doing with your hands right now.
That's what I was doing at the Sharky.
He's like, if we can't speak, we'll just sign.
No, I don't know. I want to dance through it.
Very laughing.
Yes.
She interacts. I mean, she and Norman have they do interact in a close way. I don't know what you can take from that, but and I don't want to give too much away. But she impacts not only Norman. There's several relationships that she, I think I already said that, that okay. she kind of dabbles in with without sure. giving too much away. I'm the worst at teasing anything,
no,
by the
no,
way. I'm always like, I don't want to say too much.
What? Yeah, no, well, I know. No. I completely know what you're saying because I'm nervous here because I've seen the first episode of season three. I don't want to say anything. But are you like a classic, almost like a femme fatale character? Is that what you describe? How would you describe your character?
I would say she's a femme fatale. Yeah, absolutely. And she's just, I mean, she's a very strong, she's a very strong, determined woman who comes in with a mission and goes after it. And then because of that and because of who she is, it affects everybody around her.
Well said.
Thanks. Well, thanks.
We also know, like, from season two that, you know, Romero kind of left season two gray but still upholding the law. And we kind of just touched on this earlier again, but I know in the ish. In the pilot, in the premiere episode.
The third season pilot.
In the season premiere, they pick that up as to where, you know, his trajectory is. And I'm just curious, are we going to see, I mean, Sheriff Romero as the law, as the law of the town, or is that going to, I mean, I guess we're
let me just say, I feel like it's
so hard not to spoil anything.
I feel like what I've seen so far from this season, Romero seems to take a darker turn.
There's no question. And
I think
the town is
changing. Good job.
Does that help, Joe?
There you go. This is darker turn. Yes,
and the town is taking a darker turn. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's basically on the verge of potentially imploding, given what happened at the end of it last year. So, you know, he's got to pick up the pieces, and I think we'll quickly discover that it's not as easy as he thought it would be. I think I'm okay saying that right now.
Okay.
Everybody died last year, right?
Yeah.
Everybody did. So it's pretty much like, what do you do then? Like, everything kind of gets dark.
Exactly. Got to rebuild.
You know?
Bring new people in.
We have a couple.
Casting bonanza.
Yeah, it is a casting bonanza. We have a couple of new people. I mean, aside from you. Now all I can think about is pterodactyl.
So glad that you brought that up, by the way.
I don't think we didn't do that on air. So that's what people used to call you when you were young.
That was our nickname, my brothers and I.
Yes. Yeah.
The pterodactyl family.
The pterodactyl, because your name is tricky.
Yeah. It's a little tricky, yeah.
And we got deeper in what Joe's was, but we won't get on that.
We'll just say there's worse nicknames.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But we also have Ryan Hurst that's on this season, right? And he plays
a character named Chick Hogan, another mysterious character.
That sounds a suit. Yo, Chick.
He's fantastic as well. And also
Kevin, too.
Kevin Ram from Mad Men.
Yes.
And many other amazing shows. And Nightcrawler.
Kevin Ram's amazing.
He's also fantastic. I mean, it's an incredible, you know, incredible cast. This year, it's just phenomenal. So it's adding. And the roles are so beautifully written, too. And we were talking before, Tracy, I remember taking a peek at your script when you came in on the first episode. And she'd done all this homework. And it was all on the sides of this. It's really amazing. Right. And it shows, as you saw the first episode, how rich her character is. Well, I mean, that's the kind of actors we got.
We got
really lucky. I mean,
growing up professional actor people.
Like the real deal.
The real pros. Yeah. Grown up. She can read right
here. She can read. She wrote her own script.
She did good. Yeah,
she does good.
She does good acting.
For some of the fans too, like, you know, one thing we've grown to expect is these Easter eggs, these sort of heart things that sort of reach back to the Psycho Mill franchise. Can we expect to see sort of more? I don't know if they're specific Easter eggs, but more sort of hints or foreshadowing or allusions to the classic Hitchhiker movie.
Yes.
In season three. Yes,
definitely.
Okay.
There'll be Easter eggs for sure.
Okay,
for sure.
Good.
Yeah, and some of it is definitely in the writing, and some of it is whatever the directors bring in.
Oh wow! So that's sometimes you know, it's on the page. You're like, oh, yes. Easter egg, and then sometimes you, as a director, may say,
episode five.
There's no Easter eggs in that.
Too much.
No, but there are, and sometimes Freddie will do it. It's interesting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
he'll bring in something. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
That's
he's like, I watched the film, and he'll bring some element to it.
I was at a garage sale. I saw this. This works great.
Well, no, I mean, Freddie needs, Norman needs something in that room. That room is pretty sparse. He's got like
a beaver,
a stuffed dog.
Yeah, the beaver.
He's got a lamp. My man's got like get him a poster. Yeah. Give him something. Get my man Lady Gaga poster.
You're gonna send him a poster.
He's 17. Yeah. Like, I don't know. So yeah, I don't know. Do we have anything else? Anything else from the folks?
From the folks, a lot of people just want to know more about your relationship with Norma for season 3 of Where It Takes.
Yeah, it a lot more push and pull.
So what episode do you guys sleep together?
Every one of them.
Yes.
There it is.
Five doubly so.
No. Episode 5 is very heavy.
That's so crazy.
There's a lot of push-pull, gets pretty heated. And it's sort of, we get into sort of some more emotional stuff as well.
Okay.
Nice. All right. I'm so excited. I can't tell you. I'm so excited.
You.
And we also talked about the fact that Bradley's back. Did we talk about that on air? No. Bradley's coming back, season 3. That's huge.
Yes.
Bradley's coming back and, makes a very big impression. And, it's pretty great.
That's huge. I'm just – now all I'm thinking is I'm curious if – Bradley is going to have some scenes with Tracy, and I know that you guys can't answer that, don't answer it, but I'm just curious now how those scenes would go. I'll just play them out in my head.
Many scenes with Tracy. But no, I just want to say, I think we can objectively, you and I can say this, Young and Tracy as well, I think this is, I think, the strongest season to date.
Oh, wow.
As great as I thought.
That's a high bar.
That's a thumbs up from the chair,
bar.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
He said that's okay.
It's okay to say that. No, but it is true. I think as great as 1 and 2, I thought were incredible. The writing and obviously the cast and every element of the story. It's also, we're paying off a lot of things that were set up before.
Sure.
I think this season is pretty extraordinary. So I'm excited for people to share, to share with people.
It's so exciting to hear because when you see, it always takes a show, I think, I mean, this show is good from the start, but it always takes a show a couple of seasons to really kind of get into their groove and find, what works. And so this is when shows start getting really, really good.
Yes.
Yeah.
It happened again with Lost, too. Lost started getting really, right around season 3. It really started getting that dirt.
Yeah. Exactly.
The writers and what's really comfortable in the world. I mean, the world is very well established.
Sure.
We did all the world building in season 1 and all the character sort of character depth stuff in season 2. And now it's like, okay, we know what's going on. Now we can tell some stories.
And the wonderful thing also about the season is the return of Caleb.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Which I didn't know if that was a spoiler or not, but
that's out. We can safely talk about Caleb. Yeah. That is, an enormous part of the season in that. Mm-hmm. Now the conflict has been brought into the family.
Sure.
As more of an internal thing, which I think is when the show sings. It's when you're dealing with that power play between Norman and Dylan in particular. And then you throw Caleb in the mix and it really just sort of throws everything. You'll see it's pretty explosive and he's phenomenal, and it's,
he was great in season 2. Yeah.
He's great in season 2. And what he does this year is pretty amazing. You guys you'll love it. Yeah, it's pretty great. And it's very brave of the writers to really handle the,
the subject matter, we hinted at it in season, we never found out, if something really did go down.
Said, yeah.
It's what Norma said. They talk a little bit more about in the first episode. Mm-hmm. And it's also not a spoiler. It is a spoiler, but Norma gets some news. We get some news in the first episode too, some family news, which definitely sort of sets the tone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure.
I'm sure we'll set the tone for what's going to happen in the future. So it's really cool.
For sure.
I'm sure Norman will handle this perfectly.
Norman
will because his uncle and his mom and his brother.
Listen,
and
Norman's
like, hey, I'm cool. I'm
fine. No big deal.
I just wouldn't want to be staying in room 4 when that was happening.
Oh.
7, 9, 15, anything but 4.
Anything you guys want to talk about or tell the fans or anything we should look out for? Anything in particular that you can say at all?
You go.
You're an amazing driver. You get to drive.
Oh, the Porsche driving.
Yes. Wait. What happened? Go ahead. Go slow.
I get to drive a Porsche.
Yeah?
And, it's standard. It was great fun. They just came up to me and they're like, can you drive manual? And I was like, I can indeed. Wow. It was just it was, I had a really good time with it. Especially at one point, I was saying earlier, at one point they were like, you're just going to need to pick up the pace. I was like, well, I mean, if you got to speed.
You got to speed.
You got to do what you got to do. It's part of the job.
The guy on the, he said it on the thingy dingy. I didn't have a choice. On the thingy dingy.
That's actually a thing.
That's a technical term.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it was good fun. And they were like, do you want us to reset the car for you? I was like, yeah, I got it.
I don't.
I'm not getting out of the car for the rest of the day. Yeah. I'm here. Yeah,
I can reverse a car.
Yeah. It was good fun.
Well, that's good. We see a little bit of that in the first episode, which is very cool. Cool car for sure. Any Romero? Any last minute Romero stuff?
What can I not spoil? No, I think the backstory to me is probably the biggest reveal for me, you know, in episode 7. And just his dynamic with Norma, that to me is really the heart of, for, you know, his work this season, you know, is really having to deal with this woman and the complications of, you know, of Annika as well. I mean, there's, and what you bring this season is extraordinary and sort of, blows up, you know, the whole story as well, which is great. Right. So here we have a massive part of the story. With us.
Cracking it wide open.
You heard it here first after buzzers. we'll definitely be back to talk about this in detail, talk about this episode, break it down in detail on Monday when it comes to we'll do it on Tuesday after the show airs. And then
because we do it before, it's really weird. People get mad at us.
Don't tune in for spoilers.
You know, one last bit of business. You know, there was this party at Comic-Con.
Well, yes. He's so upset.
That I had an opportunity to do this thing. And I was, I don't know what, how, or where.
You would have been great at the Playboy party. You would have been awesome.
But you don't have to say anything, but I hear the party was fantastic.
It was just all right.
Thank you for saying that.
But this year, this is
going to be the one.
I'm crashing that party so hard this
Third
year.
Third time's a charm.
So hard. Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us both.
Thanks for having
me.
Do you guys want to shout out your Twitter handles or your Instagrams if you want to?
My Twitter is trspiritakis, and the Instagram is just spiritakis.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And my Twitter is at Carbonell Nestor.
Yes, it is. Yeah, Carmelo, yes.
Not Campbell.
Campbell Nestor.
Not Campbell. That's the best.
Totally different Nestor.
Dua, where can we find you?
You can find me at Dua Casey. That's DuaKaiSSI on Twitter.
Okay. No Instagram yet, huh?
Yeah. You know what? One of these days, I'm like an old lady when it comes to Instagram.
All right.
I'll explain it later.
She uses Polaroids.
It's like I'm the only one that has a paper notebook still. Yeah, everybody else has iPads.
You can find me. Hopefully, you can find me at the Comic Con party. But if not, you can still find me on Twitter and Instagram at Nando Bell, NANDOVEL. Here at AfterBuzz for a bunch of other shows. You guys with the Blacklist. I'm doing Survivor this season.
Oh, great!
You and I got to talk.
Great. Yes.
And Scorpion and Walking Dead.
Sounds good.
Very cool.
Joey Flip.
You can find me at Joe Flippo on the Twitters, JOEFLIPO. That's what you want.
The Twitters.
What do you want? What do you want?
Which website?
Well, I meant josephsanfilippo.com if you were bored.
You're selling yourself. Could
you say that faster?
JOSEPHSANFELIPPO.com.
Thank you.
Thanks, Pterodactyl. Whatever.
It's on. That's my word.
It's on. Like, you. I'm Joe Braswell. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Joe K. Braswell. Thank you so much to Nestor and Tracy for joining
us. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. And we'll see you guys all next week.
Thanks, guys.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.